Hey guys, Fishing Kid here. Before we get started in today's video, I just want to take a minute to talk about these Versa Rattles from Whisker Seeker Tackle. They put out sound and vibration in the water to help those catfish keen in on your bait. If you've seen any of my catfishing videos, I use these things all the time. So for the rest of February, Whisker Seeker is offering 25% off to all the BFFs out there with the coupon code BFF25_Versa. Hope you guys enjoy the episode, and I'll see you later.
Welcome to another episode of Beer Fish Fanatics. This is Grandy with Mom Pop Fishing. We have
Kit with the Fishing Kit YouTube channel.
And today we have a special guest. I think Fishing Kit and myself talking about this. We definitely want to have the Iowa DNR represent, you know, at least quarterly with us. So today we actually have Tyler Stubbs. He's the Iowa DNR community fishing biologist. He's gracious enough to spend his time this evening with us. So thank you so much, Tyler.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So anybody who needs to know about Tyler, all you need to do is kind of go look into the Iowa DNR. Obviously, he's part of the Iowa DNR podcast. Make sure you guys check that out with Ross Peterson and Jeff Kapaska and everything. You guys do that monthly, right?
Yeah, every month. I think I've been on there maybe 2 years now, and I think Jeff and Ross were doing it for maybe 2 years before I came on.
Cool.
So it's been going a while.
Yeah, so make sure everybody check that out. They got some great information on that. So this episode, so I just want to say thanks to Kelowna Brewing again down there in Kelowna, Iowa. I'm going light today, Kit. I'm doing the Kelowna Classic. It's a light lager. Yeah, I'm going light, man. I don't know. What do you got?
I got the same thing. I had a long day at work, but I'm going to take it easy today.
Awesome. So let me pour this. I'm going to, you know, usually we're kind of hop heads, but today, I don't know, man, I just decided like, I'm not going to do hops. I'm not going to do dark beer today. I'm just going to do a nice little light lager. And so light beer, are they all light in calories? Can somebody fact check me on that? I don't know 100% sure. Like, I know supposedly like a Bud Light, Coors Light, all those domestic beers, I think they're like 100 to 110 calories. Like a regular craft beer is like 140 calories, something like that, right? So my question is, on craft light beers, like light lager, are they 100? You know what? I should ask them, but is it like 100? I would think, right, Kit? I don't know.
I would think so.
That's why they call it light, right? I don't know. Yeah. All right, cheers, man.
All right, cheers.
Yeah, that's actually really good. It's light beer, but it has flavor, better than the other watered down stuff. But all right, man. Yeah. All right, Tyler, let's get into Tyler. I want to get more information and learn about, because I actually have a lot of questions. I think Fishing Kid has a lot of questions. Hopefully we don't bore you, Tyler, but first things first. I mean, do you mind telling our audience, telling us a little bit about yourself? I know you have an extensive background in regards to the Iowa DNR and fisher, you know, biologists and everything. But can you explain that and what you do and you know, what effects or your department does in regards to the Iowa DNR and everything?
Yeah, so the community fishing program started, I want to say 2016 is when I was hired up here. Before I came here, I was a biologist for the state of Mississippi, but I'm originally from Iowa, okay. Up around the Fort Dodge Gallery. And, you know, the DNR has always worked with cities. If they needed help or they had questions, we would always help. But we never really had a dedicated effort to really improve things and help cities along the way. And so that's where this kind of program came from. I want to say probably 2012, somewhere in there, we noticed a shift in our license sales from folks that lived in rural Iowa to urban Iowa. Mm-hmm. So the majority of our sales in urban Iowa is just increasing every year. And so, you know, why not do some more work where a lot of our anglers are actually living and try to do it as close as we can. And the cities are doing that. So with the community fishing program, we help cities with, you know, the majority of these are stormwater retention basins. So we help them with making designs on those and fish stocking, help them figure out vegetation control issues. Some of them are pits, like borrow pits or gravel mines that we can help them manage and stock fish in. But the biggest thing is the retention basins. That's kind of our bread and butter. And that is, you know, these were for a long time built with like a max depth of 6 foot, very shallow, built for stormwater control, which makes total sense. A lot of times people would turn these into fisheries, stock fish in them. And, you know, then over the winter or late summer, we'd have fish kills. And so then the city would be like, why are all these people calling us about fish kills when these weren't even supposed to be for fishing? why are people complaining about all the vegetation when these, you know, these are stormwater basins? And so that's kind of where we've merged that world of fishing and stormwater. We're helping cities develop ponds that require a little less maintenance and provide the opportunity to have a sustainable fish population. And they're still getting their stormwater control. So it's kind of a two-fold deal. And it's been well received. Since 2017, we've worked with cities on, by the end of 2021, we'll be at 66 new ponds. And so that's over 300 acres of new water to fish around the state. Majority of them here in the Des Moines metro area. But so it's, I don't know, it's been awesome. Working with cities, you know, going to city council meetings and park board meetings and stuff like that. That's not a place where you typically see, you know, the DNR fishery show up at, you know, a city Des Moines park board meeting. But it's a welcome place. We have a great partnership. We work together, and it's all for fishermen, all for the angler. So
nice.
That's kind of how the community fishing program been born. Yeah.
Cool.
Hey, can you talk about what kind of species are you guys putting in these ponds?
So we treat them all like farm ponds technically. And so we stock them with largemouth bass, bluegill and channel catfish. Some of the pits like Gray's Lake or Purple Martin, Copper Creek, for instance, they get Terry Trueblood in Iowa City, gets hybrid striped bass. And then we've started to experiment some with yellow perch in some of the retention ponds to see what we can make happen with that. But for the most part, we treat them all just like a farm pond. We rely on the fish to reproduce. A lot of states have, you know, their urban programs are just continually stocking catchable sized fish to try to increase catch rates in that. But we treat them, I mean, there's so many of them. We're up, you know, it's over 100 in the Des Moines area. There's no way we could be able to keep up with that. So we just try to stock them all as a farm pond. The bass, the bluegill reproduce, and then we supplementally stock channel catfish every 3 to 5 years or so because they typically don't reproduce.
Okay. You're making him happy when you said about those hybrid bass, because that's like his favorite fish to go for. And then you can see that on that picture. And then mentioning that at Copper Creek, so everybody knows I live 2 minutes away from Copper Creek, and I had no idea they had hybrid bass in there until this guy. Were you on a kayak or
no? I was fishing on shore.
You're shore fishing, and he goes, yep. Hey, I caught like a 2.5 pound wiper there. And then I'm like, huh? They didn't even know they had wipers at Copper Creek. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So, so why do some of these bodies of water have wipers like those pits?
So a lot of those pits, well, all the ones I mentioned have gizzard shad in them. And so it's one way to take advantage of those gizzard shad. And it's, you know, the hybrid striped bass, the wiper is a bonus species. You know, they grow large, they grow quick being a hybrid. And so we try to keep, like at Copper Creek's a pretty low population, but it's a little higher quality population. They're in there to take advantage of those gizzard shad and provide an additional opportunity.
I actually wanted to ask an ice fishing question to you too, because I don't know when we release this episode, but just to kind of give everybody a heads up, we're going through a deep freeze right now. Because I mean, we just got done doing the yellow bass bonanza when it was like minus 39 wind chill. All right, so when people, I'll tell you this right now, it was very brutal. I don't even know how we got through the entire weekend, because we even pre-fished, and I was like, man, it was very brutal. But Tyler, I wanted to ask you, because this was something I think we spoke a little bit about a couple weeks ago. I think a lot of people have been asking, you know, why can't they ice fish in specific, you know, cities and towns nearby? Specifically, let's say ice fishing, because, you know, I live in Pleasant Hill, Iowa. So, you know, it's a, just so people who listening who don't know, it's a suburb of Des Moines. It's a little bit east of Des Moines. And we can't ice fish on our little ponds or creeks or, you know, lakes around here in Pleasant Hill. And I believe in Altoona, you can't, or Bondurant, I don't think you can either. Do you mind explaining a little bit? Because I know we have a lot of listeners who are local and are probably just kind of wondering, you know, the reasoning behind that, why they can't ice fish those lakes, but then you can go to the next town, you know, 1 mile over, and they can ice fish those ponds or whatnot.
Or even in the same town, like mm-hmm. one place in Des Moines you can, and then another place in Des Moines you can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. Some of the cities do have ordinance, like actual city ordinances that prohibit ice fishing, ice skating, any sort of ice recreation. You know, you mentioned Pleasant Hill and Altoona. Bondurant does allow it. You can ice fish in Paducah or any of the other, I think there's three ponds here in town in mm-hmm. Bondurant. But yeah, a lot of it's ordinances that in Pleasant Hill's case, they've been there a long time. Copper Creek usually has some pretty shady ice. You know, the geese keep it open a long time. There's a lot of springs out there. And so as Pleasant Hill continues to grow and starts adding more and more of some of these retention basins, that'll be something that'll help me be able to open up a conversation with the city about maybe changing that. And, you know, Waukee is one that recently made it so you can ice fish. Norwalk's another one, made it so you can ice fish. We're starting to see them change a little bit. Some of those ordinances are just old. You know, a lot of it's based on the perception of liability. You know, if somebody were to fall in, who's liable for that? Or somebody were to, you know, fall in and drown, you know, who's actually liable for that? As far as some of the cities that allow ice fishing on some and not others, you know, you mentioned Des Moines. I think somebody else that does that too, maybe Johnston has an ordinance where you can ice fish in four or five of them, but not one. Mm-hmm. And some of that's specifically because of ice quality. Like in the Johnston case, I believe there's one that they don't allow it on. It sits right along a four-lane highway. It receives quite a bit of salt when we do have some runoff, pretty big spring in it as well. And so, you know, the ice may be, you know, 7-8 inches at the pond down the street, but in that one, it's only 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. There's some safety reasoning behind those ordinances. And same thing with like Gray's Lake being connected to the river. I haven't been out there on the ice, I guess, but, you know, supposedly there's times a year where there's some gap, pretty sizable gaps between the ice and the water, depending on what the river level's doing. And so there's some safety reasons behind some of those regulations too. But the biggest thing is on the Fish Local page, you can click on that individual water body, especially if you're in the Des Moines area. I think I've got them all updated, and it'll tell you if you're allowed to ice fish it or not. And that's completely up to the city to decide. It's their property. And we'll work through them on, you know, we're trying to get some of those changed, but, you know, some of them probably aren't going to change, and that's fine. Like you mentioned, you can go a mile in either direction and probably find one that you can ice fish. So it's something that we're working through, but on the Fish Local page, you can check that out. You can click on each individual water body and it'll show you if you can or can't. So I've tried to do some of that background work for you. But yeah, there's a variety of reasons for those ordinances in regards to ice fishing.
Yeah, we'll make sure Fishing Kit will make sure he puts the link for that so that people can take a look at that. And you know what? You answered one of my questions about Gray's Lake. I've always wondered, like, come on, dude, why can't we? And then that completely makes sense. I mean, if you really think about it, you know, safety wise and everything, I think you probably answered a ton of people who listen to this that are from Central Iowa have always asked that, like, why? We can ice fish over here, and then why the heck can we not ice fish Gray's Lake? I think you just pretty much answered that. Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah, and I think some of it's ice skating too. Ice fishermen have the ability to check the ice and check the depth of the ice. But if you're out ice skating or playing hockey or whatever, you don't have the ability to do that. Yours not. I don't ice skate, I guess, but if I did, I probably wouldn't bring an auger with me. So, you know, you wouldn't be able to check. So I think there's some of those safety reasons there. All as right. Well, for the other.
Yeah. We got to make this a rule. If you got to ice skate, bring a spud bar.
Safety first.
Yeah, I guess if they allow ice fishermen out there, then other people are going to see, then they're going to go out there. Then those are the people that will probably end up hurting themselves or whatever.
Yeah, it definitely opens up the potential to do that. But the good thing is, you know, in the majority of the cities, especially in the Des Moines area, ice fishing's allowed. You know, if you're in Waterloo, Cedar Falls, ice fishing's allowed up there. And so, you know, there's plenty of places to go close to home.
There was one, I think, right before we got on, you know, Fishing Kid and myself, we were just kind of talking like, all right, so what determines an urban pond from any, you know, regular, like in your department? So what makes it like, okay, this is a project we're going to work on, it's considered urban. So what constitute it as that?
That's a loaded question. You have no idea. I spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. So I think the Census Bureau listed as 50,000 people is considered urban.
Okay.
But we've only got like four communities in the state of Iowa that are 50,000 or over. And so we drop that down to around 25,000, which is actually about 25 communities. And so that's kind of where we started focus when we started all this, to include those communities. I want to say the 25th one was maybe Fort Dodge or Newton, somewhere in there in Indianola, but then including also the suburbs, you know, cities like Bondurant, you know, only has 5,000 or 6,000 people, but it's connected to Altoona and probably connected to Ankeny within the next couple of years. And you've got some of those other communities that are like, and so that's actually kind of the reason why we changed the name. When we first started, it was the urban program, but we've changed it to the community fishing program because that is something that resonates with everybody. You know, it's people, even people in Des Moines don't really consider themselves, you know, quote urban. And so we just kind of changed it to be more community based, but we work with anybody. You know, if there's a city out there that has questions or, you know, has something they need to figure out, a problem, you know, I've worked with cities down to just a few hundred people that have public fishing ponds. And so it's kind of broadened our scope a little bit, but the majority of the work is definitely focused on those top kind of 25 communities. And again, just looking for population, trying to get somewhere close. For the more people we can get to a location, you know, that would, or the location that would serve the most amount of people is really kind of a focus. And especially in, you know, you start talking about the Ankeny ponds, of course they have a following of their own, but you know, there's somewhere to fish in Ankeny within 5 minutes of every resident. And the majority of those are within walking distance of, you know, hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. And so they're very accessible, and that's stuff we're really looking to promote.
That's actually, you guys are doing a great job up in Ankeny. I drive up there quite a bit actually to go fish, and it's just like you said, it's kind of crazy up there if nobody's ever been in that area to fish at those ponds. Is you're right, I mean, you can walk from pond to pond to pond, if you know, within a couple minutes. So it's pretty cool. So you guys are doing guys are doing a great job, honestly. I think
the cities are the ones really doing the best job. I mean, they're willing to work with us and allow fishing and promote fishing on their own. You know, if you follow any of these cities on social media, a lot of times they're posting fish pictures and, you know, big fish pictures and promoting fishing locations. And so the cities they're doing an awesome job. They're helping us all along the way, and they own the property. And so they're promoting fishing as well. So the cities, especially cities like Ankeny, I think they've got the most of any city in the state. Somewhere, I think there are 34 or 35 ponds in town. And so that's a pretty big undertaking when you start talking about vegetation control and mowing and, you know, goose problems and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's a big undertaking for a city. So
yeah,
it's we're very thankful for around the state that are willing to work with us on it to the benefit of the angler.
Yeah, I've fished in a few of those Ankeny ponds. And I know you mentioned that they usually are stocked with bass, bluegill, and catfish. So there's a couple I've caught, like hybrid bluegills, pumpkin seeds, and there's one that had a shad, like big shad. I'm talking like 12-inch shad. And I'm just curious, you know, where do you think those extra fish are coming from?
Yeah, there's on top of those, we've seen goldfish and koi and walleyes. Smallmouth bass, freshwater drum. And so the list is on. But, you know, a lot of those are probably, you know, some sort of introduction by an angler, especially some of the, it seems like they show up in ones that have a lot of houses around them. And so it's, I always envision the scenario of you catch fish, you bring it home and you don't want to clean it. So you let it go in this local pond, you know, but really don't see any terrible issues. The pumpkin seeds have actually really kind of taken off in a couple of those ponds. And there's some pretty sizable pumpkin seeds. The shad and the buffalo and drum, those are pretty well isolated in just a handful of ponds. There's actually a creek that runs up from, comes from the center of Ankeny, but it dumps out at Bob Shetler down below Sailorville. When we have really high water, there's the ability for those fish to run all the way up there. And they're right alongside that creek. And so that's the ponds where we tend to see the gizzard shad and the buffalo and drum, the more river species. But yeah, there's some little gems hidden all around the metro, with especially gold. We see a lot of goldfish, but we've seen some nice walleyes, some nice pike. I know somebody caught an 18 and a half inch smallmouth out of a pond in Ankeny last year, which is a, you know, it's a smallmouth.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing to remember, I guess, with that is it's illegal to stock fish in a public water body. So that's just something to keep in mind. It's illegal to stock fish. It's illegal to move water from one water body to the next. And so that's just something we try to get the word out on that. And it's something to be careful about. That's how we have opens up the ability to have those invasive species transfer from one lake to the next. And so it's something to be mindful of, that it is illegal to do, but even though it may be well-intentioned, mm-hmm. It is potentially an issue for us to deal with.
Actually, no, that's a great a point, because a lot of people are going to be like, you know, what's the difference? I bring this fish from this, whatever, you know, pond or other lake. What's the harm? If you don't mind, can you explain, you know, besides, you know, introducing the invasive species, what is the harm if, let's just say, I went fishing at, you know, Red Rock here and I caught a nice walleye and I caught a nice yellow bass, right? Let's just say I kind of want this species in my pond in my backyard. And I, you know what? I'm not saying somebody did that. I'm just saying it may have went across their mind. This would be kind of cool if we put this in our pond in our backyard. What's the harm?
Oh, absolutely. And you think it's only two fish, you know, or it's only one fish, but we have kind of a prescription on how we stock these ponds. We've got it down to a science on numbers, the size of the fish that we put in. You know, that's something we're still working on, but we've got, you know, down to kind of, if we put these in at this time, at this size, and this species in at this time, at this size, this is what we'll end up with, you know, 2-3 years down the road. And when you start introducing fish, different species of fish, that upsets that whole balance. You know, crappies is a good example. We see crappies show up. It's not a species we stock, but we see those show up, and it's, well, here's one crappie, you know, or here's two, and they're all 12, 13 inches long. You know, they're huge. And then 2-3 years down the road, the pond is chock full of 6-inch paper thin crappies. And that upsets that whole balance of fishery. So those crappies like to eat young of the year bass, for instance. So they crop down the bass population. And then that whole group is not there to control the bluegills. So the bluegills become overpopulated. And it's just this whole snowball effect that takes place, all from just, you know, adding one different species in. And the invasive species you brought up is another concern, especially from a plant standpoint. We see some really weird plants have shown up the last few years, especially ones that you would commonly see in aquariums. And typically, they don't cause us too big an issue, because a lot of them are very tropical. Mm. And so they can't through the winter. But we do have some invasive plants that we don't want to see spread around. Curly leaf pondweed is one that's very common in a lot of our ponds. And, the less we could spread that, the definitely the better. It's a very hard plant to get rid of. So,
no, I think,
yeah, it's amazing. One thing to a pond can do to kind of mess that balance up.
Yep. And then that crappie thing, I guarantee you somebody's probably like, oh, shit. I should have done that now, because whoever listens, because no, it's you really think about it, it's like, you know, they're just thinking, you know, what's the harm of bringing a, you know, a couple crappies here, and then we can get the crappie population getting a little bit bigger. But what you just explained, mm-hmm. there's a domino effect of what you just did, and makes sense though now in a way. Huh.
Yeah, crappies are really a sneaky species to deal with, because their reproduction is very like a cycle. And so they give you a kind of a good thought that the first few years they may not reproduce at all, and they're growing big, and you've got a, you know, small population of big fish. And then they may go 3 or 4 years in a row where they reproduce very successfully. And then it's just hard to control from then on out. And so they're a hard species to plan around. We try to keep them out of lakes, especially if they're under like 25 acres, as much as we can.
Is there a like a backup plan for, let's say, one of these ponds does get totally blown up with 5-inch crappies? Is there like a plan in place to fix that, or just redo the whole lake, or anything like that?
Yes and no. We've got plans and abilities to do that, but as I mentioned earlier, we don't own any of these. You know, these are all under city, and so if it's not, you know, its first and foremost goal is to provide stormwater control and flood control, so we're not flooding people's homes and basements. Mm-hmm. And so that's its primary control. And so if it's something, like if it's a newer pond, you know, the chance, and it gets screwed up right off the bat, you know, the best chance we have is to try to, you know, add in more predator species like largemouth bass, you know, stock adult largemouth bass, or some other way to try to correct that. Mm. Otherwise, we're, you know, it just may not happen for a while. But some of these ponds do fill in quite frequently, and so they do need dredging work every so many years. So we're starting to see kind of that cycle start. Ponds that were built in the late 90s, early 2000s, we're starting to see more and more renovations happen, and that's our opportunity to go in and maybe correct some of those issues that we've been dealing with. But yeah, so the plan's yes and no. We have the ability to do that, but a lot of times it's not our call most of the time. So
gotcha. I mean, what would you say is like, I guess, the biggest challenge for you at the Iowa DNR with anglers, I guess you can say? Is there any challenges, or what would you say is like the biggest, like, okay, guys, this is, do this and it'll make my life easier or type of thing? You know what I mean? I'm just wondering, like, as a fish biologist, like, you know, and you wish that fishermen and women would know or understand a little bit more.
Yeah, probably one of the biggest things, there's lots of things, I guess, that come to mind, but the biggest thing is buy a license and know what your license goes to pay for. Mm. You know, your license is not just thrown into some pot of money somewhere. You know, it's being returned right back around and invested right back into where you're at, you know, jobs like mine and projects that we deal with. And so just kind of the importance of a license, you know, not only from the legal aspect, yeah, you need a fishing license, but just from what it brings back to the resource for you, that's probably the biggest thing. And in an urban area, that is a big thing. You know, there's a lot of people that really just do not know who we are, what we're doing, you know, why we're managing fish in these small ponds. And it's not that they don't, you know, like us or don't care. They just simply may not know. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we're hoping, you know, people start seeing us more and more in these cities, they'll take notice to some of the work that's going on and why. And, you know, it just brings in the importance of that having that license. The other thing from an urban standpoint, we're really trying to get people to latch on to is what you do on your yard, you know, affects that pond that, you know, maybe just down the street from you, you know, not fertilizing your yard as much, picking up dog waste and, you know, taking those nutrients off the ground is something that can, you know, have a pretty big effect on that small little pond at the end of your street that you like to fish, especially when you're talking about vegetation problems. And so just getting people to see that connection that, you know, what I do in my front yard to my grass, you know, is ultimately affecting this pond that all my yard drains into and the quality of it. And so having that connection is a big one we're trying to work on. Mm. I'm not sure how we're gonna get that accomplished, but we're figuring it out.
Man, it's a domino effect, everyone. Damn it, just listen to Tyler. Jeez.
Hey Tyler, well, Were you involved? I guess it's not really a pond, but like Easter Lake just got renovated. Would that be considered one of your areas that you'd be involved in?
Yeah, I mean, it was renovated, I think, right when I got here. I mean, we treat it as it's an urban fishery, obviously. You know, it sits right in the middle of Southside Des Moines. And we treat it as such. I work with Ben, the district biologist. He's out of Boone. And Polk County Conservation actually owns that. And so we've all worked together on that project as far as restocking and the renovation process and all that. But that's one size-wise is a little out of my house. I'm usually dealing with the actual city-owned smaller ones.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought about it because you were talking about like the nutrients and stuff. I remember seeing a lot of posts on Facebook when they're like taking all these measurements to try to keep those nutrients out of the lake so it doesn't, get blown up with algae or whatever. So it just brought that to mind.
Yeah, a lot of cities will have like stormwater grants that you could apply for to help pay for, rain gardens in your yard or, as some sort of lawn management stuff, rain barrels. And so that's kind of the reasoning behind all that is to help improve the water quality down the street. But yeah, Easter Lake's a good example.
We actually have a lot of listeners from different states, from whether it's in California, Minnesota, Wisconsin. I mean, we got listeners all over the US actually. What would you say is, I guess you can say, Tyler, is the biggest difference between the Iowa DNR and would you say the Minnesota DNR or the Wisconsin DNR or California? What would you say is a biggest difference of what we do versus or is there a difference between how they run things and everything, different states?
I mean, a lot of things are very similar. The funding for all, as far as wildlife, fisheries, and law enforcement goes, the funding's all the same. That's the national model that your hunting and fishing licenses go to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and then based on an equation, get sent back to you for reinvestment. And so that model's all the same. As far as things we work on, yeah, you're going to see quite a bit of differences. I mean, we're doing things the same way. We're still using the same equipment. We're statistically doing the same things, but we don't have a Lake Michigan. We don't have a Lake of the Woods. And vice versa, in those states, a lot of those don't have, small southern Iowa impoundments. Most of their lakes, like in Minnesota and Wisconsin, are glacial. And so that's a whole different component. You talk about renovations and draining a lake and starting over. You can't do that to Okoboji. You can't do that to some of those. And so that's probably one of the main differences is and Iowa's uniquely situated where we've got glacial lakes on the northern end. We've got trout streams in northeast Iowa. And then we've got lots of small ponds and small impoundments and some large, really large flood reservoirs like Sailorville and Red Rock that are going to be, you don't see those in Minnesota or Wisconsin, for instance. So there are some differences there. And the species that we're working on, we work with a lot of bass, bluegill, catfish type fisheries, where a lot of the, especially the northern states, walleye, muskie, northern pike, whitefish, those yellow perch, those are very common, much more common species. The urban biologist in Wisconsin, she's out of Milwaukee, and a lot of their fisheries are yellow perch, pumpkin seed, bass type fisheries, which is so a little bit of different species, I guess, composition. But for the most part, we're all doing things the same way. We're just doing it in a different place on a different resource.
Makes sense.
As far as the agencies go, we're a little unique as far as we're very consolidated. And so the DNR is huge. Not only do we have wildlife, fisheries, law enforcement, parks, but there's this whole environmental side with water quality and underground storage tanks and air quality and all that kind of stuff. Where in a lot of the southern states, I came from Mississippi, it was Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks. And law enforcement was there, and that was it. The environmental side was its own entity. And so that's how a lot of other states are as well. So there's some little bit of differences there, but the funding for your fishing license stays the exact same. It has to be spent on fishing related things. So that's a good, I hadn't really thought about that before. That's a good question.
So everybody buy your damn license, man.
It's easy to get. We even have an app now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I love the app. Not gonna lie. I don't like carrying that little piece of paper anymore. I got the app. Show that's my license. And then was it me and you, Kay, or we were just talking to our my brother-in-laws? Dude, Iowa's fishing license price is very affordable compared to a lot of other states, FYI. So just buy it.
We're trying.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, because we like to travel to other states, or especially the neighboring states, and, you know, we kind of try to compare the license prices, and some of them are like, man, like, it costs like up to maybe twice as much as what we would pay here in Iowa. I mean, granted, we're from out of state, but we're even like comparing to like the local, I guess, a resident license. Like theirs is, you know, up to twice as much as what we pay.
Mm-hmm. Well, states like Minnesota, for instance, I don't know what their license costs are, but I mean, land of 10,000 lakes, right? I mean, they've got a ton of resources up there that, you know, it takes money to take care of those things.
So why do they keep coming down here? Man, hey, Minnesota, I love you guys. Don't get me wrong. But we see you guys a lot. I'm not going to lie, man.
I think I know why. Because their rule book is, like what Jeff said, is like, you know, this big, and ours is like this.
Yes. And that's, I think, when we had Jeff on, that was, he's spot on that. He's like, yep. The difference between a lot of Iowa and a lot of other places is the rule book versus that and that. And like you just said, that's, everybody prefers that.
Mm-hmm.
The small amount.
Yeah, we try to keep it as simple as possible while still, you know, providing a good opportunity to catch fish, not only catch fish, but to catch, you know, potentially a lot and some big fish. But yeah, trying to keep the regulations as simple as possible is definitely a priority.
Agreed.
Oh yeah, Tyler. I can't believe we skipped over this, but the trout stockings, is that part of the Fish Local program, or is that like a separate thing?
It's kind of a merged program, I guess. But the trout stockings, they're all, I think we're kind of in the middle of them right now. I think there's been maybe half of them stocked so far. And again, some of that's based on location that allow ice fishing, and some locations, you know, would allow ice fishing, but, you know, they're down in clear in southern Iowa, and on a normal year may only have 3 inches of ice. So, but the trout program has, you know, really been an awesome program. If you've ever been to a trout stocking, you know, like Ada Hayden in the winter, I think we had like 500 and some people on the ice a couple of years ago.
Mm.
People catching trout left and right, you know, screaming kids, you know, first fish. It was awesome to be out there. And it's one of those programs that gives you an opportunity to catch something that you wouldn't normally catch without traveling to Northeast Iowa close to home. But it also kind of gives you a glimpse of what exists up there. You know, if you've never been to the Driftless area, you know, Northeast Iowa or Southwestern Wisconsin, it's awesome up there. And to see some of the work that especially our biologists in Northeast Iowa and the landowners around there, I mean, we went from having hardly any naturally reproducing trout streams in Northeast Iowa to, I think they're up over 70 now, maybe. And all that's from, you know, commitment of land resource around there from the private landowners and DNR and county and all that staff. So, but the trout program it's a lot of fun. I take advantage of it. I take my kids when we go. We're usually pretty successful. That's kind of the goal behind it is, you know, not only do you have a chance to maybe see one, but you've got, you'll hopefully have a really good chance of catching not only one, but, you know, maybe catching your five, especially those first few days. But it gets utilized a lot. And I think we're up to, I'm going to say 17 ponds now around the state. You know, here in the Des Moines area, we've got Johnston and Lake Patoka and Bondurant, and then Banner Lakes down Indianola. And then of course, Ada Hayden and Ames, but it's coast to coast, man. Council Bluffs to Davenport. It's Fort Madison, dispenser. It's everywhere. So get out and take advantage of that. You do need your trout stamp to go and catch those fish and keep those fish. But it's a fun program to be a part of. And if you're ever up in Northeast Iowa, check out those hatcheries. You know, we've got hatcheries in Manchester, Decorah, and Elkader. They're really neat. You can, you know, feed fish and all that kind of stuff and really see where they lay the groundwork for that. Those are all, you know, homegrown fish in our fish hatcheries. They're something we're pretty proud of.
Yeah. I think it was like two or three, maybe about 3 years ago, I was camping. I took my whole family. We were camping up there in Backbone. And you're right, the hatcheries up there is pretty cool. My kids love it. They're like, holy crap. Like, it was so cool. You get to feed all the trout and stuff. It's really cool. So anybody who's, you know, comes to Iowa, who lives in central Iowa, get up to Northeast Iowa if you get an opportunity. It is pretty darn cool. Take the kids up there, go camping, and yeah, you're right. Take them to the hatcheries. The trout hatcheries is pretty cool. My kids love it. So they're just like, they want to go back. So whenever I get an opportunity on that, so can't wait.
I haven't tried it yet. It's on my goals, my to-do list, but I want to fish in one of those trout streams in the middle of the winter because they don't typically freeze.
Mm-hmm.
Open all year round. That's just something on my to-do list to get up there. And I haven't caught a channel cat through the ice yet. I don't know what's going on, but I cannot figure that out. The Short Rod Show guys said they can do it all the time. I have no idea. I don't know what.
Join the club. I am this whole season, this ice season, I'm still skunk on the channel cats. This guy caught so many last year, but this year you struggle a little bit too though, Ken, huh?
I guess I forgot how to do it this season. I don't know what happened,
but yeah, his channel, if you get a chance, Tyler, he was like slaying him last year through the ice, and then this year, I don't know. I was like, oh, I was so excited because I watched him. I was like, oh, I can't wait. He's gonna take me to get me on some, right? This year, I have caught zero cats through the ice. I still got a chance. Maybe another month, I think. Maybe.
Yeah, same here. Last year, I was like, all right, I got this. I got this. Next season is gonna be so easy, and I have not caught one yet this season. Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing is the same thing with wipers. Like, I think it was two years ago. I was like, oh, yeah, this guy introduced me to wipers through the ice. I'm like, how hard can that be, right? Yeah, it's pretty damn hard. At least for me. I don't know, man. It's just like, golly, these two species. I haven't caught a wiper. I haven't caught a catfish through the ice this season. I'm still struggling on that. So, go figure.
All right, Tyler. I'm going to get away from all the businessy fisheries kind of talk, but so as an angler, what do you like to target?
I'm pretty opportunistic. If it's a fish, I'm gonna try to catch it. but I like to fish for catfish. I'll be honest with you, the last couple of years I've really focused on trying to hit all these urban ponds in the metro, not only from my own professional, you know, benefit that I've been to all of them, I've fished all of them, but just I don't know, because I really like them. I mean, each one of them has their own kind of little identity. And so I've really been trying to figure out the catfish. And there's some good catfish here in some of these ponds. And there's some decent bluegills. I really got into, a couple years ago, throwing a frog for bass in the summer. And so I spent a considerable amount of time with, you know, a tackle box full of different frogs. I think I just went to like Bass Pro and bought every different frog I could find. And, you know, trying to narrow down a tactic. And, you know, I think I got better at it because I definitely caught some more fish by the end of the year. But I'll fish for anything. I've got two daughters that are, they're wanting to go fishing all the time now as well. So we do a lot of bluegill fishing, especially in Altoona. We've got a couple good spots where the fish aren't all that big, but we can guarantee we're going to catch something.
All right. We're going to have to get out, Tyler. I got to get out with you. I'll bring my daughters. They are really into fishing. And then plus we got to get out with this guy, Tyler. I'll take you out. He's going to get you on some cats. So you can get on some pretty good catfish here and there, right?
Oh yeah. From shore. Or do you have a kayak, Tyler?
I do not. No.
But I know, especially when the once the ice comes out off of our lakes here, that's, I don't know, I was like, when I first started getting into it last year, I always heard about the ice out bite. It's like, man, like people are catching piles and piles of them. I never really capitalized on that bite until like last year, and we were catching some big fish like locally. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I've heard about the after ice bite, especially Big Creek, you know, below Big Creek and in certain areas of Big Creek. Mm-hmm. Just haven't been out there to take advantage of that yet. But yeah, it sounds so easy, right? It's gotta be simple. I saw it on Facebook. So
yep.
How hard?
Speaking of Facebook, so we gotta touch this subject. And especially when you brought up Big Creek too. But before that, yeah, I know. But before that, though, definitely we got to get together when ice out. Fishing Kit has some pretty good spots. We can catch some good catfish, I think. So we'll definitely do that. We'll get in touch with you on that one. But yeah, the OO part. No, it's not OO. I'm just curious because, okay, I listened to your guys' last podcast, Big Creek. You know, Jeff went on a spew about the reasoning behind. So to help explain it, honest to the masses, to really understand, because it's a numbers game. So let me touch on this just a little bit. There was a big hoopla on Facebook. There's a big hoopla about Big Creek and wipers and people keeping a bunch of them and how it's going to affect it. We need to have limits and all that stuff. So, I mean, as you're a fish biologist. So as a fish biologist, Big Creek is one of, you know, Des Moines, you know, central Iowa, main spots for people to go fish, right? And, you know, obviously they have a good abundance, I believe, of hybrid bass, because I think Iowa DNR did an amazing job, you know, a couple years ago when they stocked it for like many years straight. So now they're getting to that size, a great size, I don't know, maybe 5-pound-ish or so now. And so, you know, obviously we saw it on Facebook, we saw it on YouTube, whatever the case may be. And people were catching an abundance and they were taking a lot home. And everybody was like, we need to put a limit on this. We need to put, you know, people need to stop. Okay. Everybody's just jumping the horns before anything because they just saw a bunch of pictures and they just see whatever. But what do you when you saw that, I'm pretty sure you were aware and pretty sure people were hitting you guys up. Like, you guys got to put a limit on this right away, you know, before everybody's taking bucket homes of wipers. But so is this really affecting anything? And I mean, or is people just overreacting in regards to trying to set a limit for hybrid bass, you know what I mean? Or any fish for that matter. But
that's a really good question. I don't know if I have a great answer for you. I will say, I think, and Jeff had looked that stuff up. I'd have to try to remember what all he said, but I know stocked hybrids in, I want to say 16, 17, and 18. Mm-hmm. I think there's some requested for this next year. And I haven't seen the sampling data. That's not one of my focus areas, I guess. You know, it's, I've been out there with them sampling a few times, but I haven't seen what the data looks like. I know there's just for me fishing out there this spring, there's a lot of fish. It seems like I caught a ton of fish, like 11 inches. And there was a mix of hybrids and white bass in there. What I'm guessing are white bass. There's pretty hard to tell at that young age by the tongue in the dark. Those fish, you know, they're a lot of fish in that 20 to 22 inch range, probably. You know, they're only, what, 4 or 5 years old now. So those fish are growing extremely fast. They're not slowing down because of lack of resource, not slowing down because they're overpopulated by any means. That's when you would start to see like length regulations come on board, is when you've got some sort of limited resource that's slowing the growth of those fish down. Or if you're trying to protect a certain class of fish, a certain size range of fish, which is not the case with a hybrid because they're not reproducing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the hybrids are, I believe, between a white bass and a sea run striped bass. It's developed, you know, within the hatchery systems. They're stocked as kind of a bonus species, not only for the angler, but to, you know, there's abundant shad population out there for them to take advantage of. Hybrid species grow quick, just by nature. They're not putting energy into reproduction. And so as far as over harvest goes, it's not, I think a lot of people are not aware on how many fish you would really have to harvest to really have such an impact. Now, I'm not saying that may be happening. I don't know. I haven't looked at the data. I have no idea. But I mean, it was just in general, I get that question a lot on the ponds, you know, well, so-and-so, I saw him out here taking, you know, 25 bluegills 3 days in a row. When the reality of that is there's probably 2000 bluegills out there and the 50 are going to be replaced within the next few months when those bluegills reproduce. And that's the same thing with these hybrids. If we're stocking, you know, 5 to 10,000 at a time, we typically stock hybrids. You know, our hybrids, our muskies are usually stocked at a pretty large size. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but like a lot of our muskies are 12, 13 inches. Our fall catfish are 8 to 9 inches. And we do that on purpose. That's because they're not eaten right away, you know, by a largemouth or a walleye right off the bat as soon as they go in. So it improves the ability for them to successfully survive. And so, you know, if we're stocking 5 to 10,000 at a time, you know, how many of those are actually leaving the lake? It's a unique situation because you also have, I mean, the spillway, right? And so that's part of that whole barrier evaluation with our walleyes is so we're going to lose some to the angler, but we're probably losing some over the spillway. And so it's a tough balance. I really don't have an answer for it other than we don't have regulation on it. And I would probably assume we prefer not to have regulation on it just because, again, we want to keep it as simple as possible. You can't really regulate in a water body like Big Creek, just hybrid striped bass, because at certain lengths, they look so similar to white bass. You know, a lot of people are not going to be able to tell the difference. And the white bass are in there reproducing. I did see the Facebook post. I did watch it for a little bit. It got long. I couldn't keep up with it. But I mean, there's so many variables, I guess, is the point of my rambling. Is there so many variables involved in that to make it to the point that it would be looked at for regulation, that it would take some time to figure all that stuff out, especially when it's a species that we know is reproducing and we're restocking at the same time to try to keep that population up. But from a science standpoint, you know, there's no limited resource and there's really no reason to protect a certain size class. And so what would be, you know, would it just be a bag limit? And how do you regulate that with white bass? It's something that could definitely add to the confusion of things. But I'm going off of about this much information that I have, the hybrid population in Big Creek. So take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, I've caught a few out there. I keep them. I've never just knocked them cold, you know, 30, 40 a night by any means. But, you know, I've kept a few smaller ones. They taste okay to me. They're nothing. I don't know. They're good. They're edible.
But crappies taste better.
They're not my favorite. Yeah, they're not my favorite species to eat. But you know, if I catch one, I'm probably gonna keep it. But I've never caught the numbers that I'm hearing about out there, I guess.
And I think if people listen to this podcast or watching this podcast, make sure you guys go check out the Iowa DNR podcast for February for sure. You're right. Jeff went to detail about, you know, the whole spiel about those hybrid bass. And I thought it was amazing how he explained what it would take for them to put regulation. And even if and this is the thing, Jeff Kapaska even said, even if they put regulation on those hybrid bass, it would be more of a length thing, a length limit. And then on top of that, I think the biggest thing was, it's going to be a social limit. It's not even had to do with anything else. It's going to be a social limit that, because Fishing Kid always says, if we don't regulate ourselves, then the man is going to regulate us. And that's exactly kind of, in a way, that's kind of, that's pretty much what Jeff was saying. Like, you know, it's just a social regulation. It wouldn't even be in regards to the species of fish that you're just keeping too much. It was just, and that's the case. But yeah, it was a, I had to touch that a little bit. I just wanted to bring that up. I don't know. It's just one of those things because everybody saw it. I jumped into it because I was just, I mean, I didn't jump into it, but I was just like, yeah, this is an interesting question. And it's just, it's one of those things, you know, one picture that somebody posted, obviously it hit a nerve with everybody and it just kind of spewed away.
Mm-hmm.
Social media.
Bag limits are really interesting because there's some stuff that shows, you know, that some of the bag limits will actually increase your harvest. And so if you were to put a bag limit, if you had a fish that had a bag limit of 50 and then you changed it to 10, you have the potential to see more harvest because people want to reach that limit. So when they would maybe only be fishing and keep five, well, I'm only five away from my limit now. And so they continue to keep their 10 when they go out.
Yeah, psychology. See, that's psychology just plays right into that. That's interesting. No, you're right, though. It's like, I'm only five away. Yeah, dang it. That's true.
Yeah, me personally, if like the people that have been watching my channel for a while, I'm all for a length limit on wipers. I'm always preaching like, hey, don't back the big ones because next year I want to catch, you know, like a 10 pounder. If you're keeping all the 5 pounders, that might not happen. I know that's probably never going to be the case where, you know, I'm not going to catch a 10 pounder because these people are catching 5 pounders, but I like to play the odds game, I guess.
It makes sense.
But I get it.
Man, you've been talking for an hour. Holy cow, dude. This is awesome. We got to get Tyler back on. I think you bring a lot of wealth and knowledge to us, or at least to my ignorance and just educational background on fish and everything. So, Kit, you got anything else for Tyler? I mean, any questions?
Man, there's probably so many burning questions. I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now, Tyler, but if our audience wants to get a hold of you, how can they do that? You know, what are some outlets that they can reach you at?
So if they just go to the Fish Local page on the DNR's website, so it's iowadnr.gov/fishlocal. My phone number's on there, multiple places, my email's on there. And feel free to call me, email me if you have any questions. I would much rather you email me a question on something you're not sure about than go out and maybe make a mistake. And so, you know, do not hesitate at all to ask me any questions. I have no secret spots. That's what I always tell everybody. So, you know, if you say, hey, I want to catch, a bunch of bluegills with my kids, you know, what's the best place to go? You know, I will show you the spot on the map. I will point that out to you. I'm not necessarily blasting that location by any means, but I want you to be successful. And so, you know, feel free to email me or call me, and would be happy to help.
And with that, I'm going to send you an email, Tyler, at the end of this.
Good.
So I can take my kids. But no, thank you so much. I mean, I think our audience, I think myself and Fishing Kid probably learned quite a bit of stuff and, you know, reasoning behind the madness, I guess you can say, in regards to what the Iowa DNR and why you guys do certain things, and how, you know, there's always a reasoning behind it. So it's kind of cool to have you on here. Definitely want to get you back on if that's okay with you. Maybe on down the road, maybe when after we catch some catfish together, that would probably be nice. So we'll definitely do that. No, but thank you so much. And like I said, make sure, you know, listeners, go check out the Iowa DNR podcast. I think you guys do a great job of help educating, you know, local here in regards to laws, regulations, and then just the bite in itself. You know, if you like to fish, you want to learn a little bit more, that's a great podcast that I think you guys are doing. And on top of that, Fishing Kit will definitely put your link here so everybody can follow. And, you know, just like I said, Fish Local, I love that thing. I love the concept. I love everything about what you guys are doing in regards to the urban, well, community fishery and everything. So take advantage of that. And then, you know, the only other thing I can say is buy your damn license, everybody. And there's a reason why you have to buy your license. So definitely do that. So other than that, man, thank you so much, Tyler. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.